Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News. A bunch of headlines today. We had the head of the World Health Organization, Tim, coming out warning about the global COVID infection rate approaching its highest level ever. We talked about more than 200 million vaccines, though, administered here in the U.S. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, let's just give a wrap of cases. COVID cases passing 139.3 million, deaths approaching 3 million, more than 848 million shots given worldwide. And here in the U.S., 3 million a day regularly being given.
And let's just mention, too, that the European Union most probably will not renew contracts for COVID-19 vaccines with AstraZeneca and J&J, as it really is prioritizing other types of shots. That's according to a French government minister. Let's bring in Dr. Ian Lesbader, one of our favorite voices to check in with on the virus and that vaccine rollout. He is clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, with us once again on the phone in New York City. How are you?
Good, Carol and Tim. Happy Friday. Hope all's well with you folks.
Yeah, just a little tired. It was that kind of a week. Let's talk about some of the headlines that are out there. J&J, first of all, the delay, the pause. They did a review, then they came out and still said we need some more time to look into the unusual blood clotting. What do you make of that?
So the disease or the syndrome that is being talked about is something called CVST or cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. These are basically veins that collect blood from the brain and drain it out. And we do see clotting that happens in about 3 out of a million people normally. They can occur in patients who have platelet abnormalities or are prone to clotting. Sometimes we see it in patients on birth control, which we know increases clotting, pregnancy, hormonal changes, dehydration. So this clotting disorder is something that we see normally. I think it's going to be very hard to directly attribute it to the J&J vaccine. My understanding is these are six women. I don't know more details. Mm-hmm. And the clotting appears to have occurred, and it presents with headache and maybe some visual changes approximately 6 to 13 days after the vaccine. So I think it is going to be very difficult when you have six cases out of about 6 million shots in the U.S. to really say the vaccine is responsible. I'm not sure that it is, and it is really not that much higher, if at all, than we would normally see in the population. So it is possible maybe people got dehydrated, maybe these women were on birth control or pregnant or had some other condition that predisposed them. I'm not sure, at least based on this data, that it really has anything to do with the vaccine at this point.
I'm wondering, though, if the damage has been done. And I'm talking damage to Johnson & Johnson. I'm talking damage to the way that Americans and people around the world feel about the safety of a vaccine that, until last week, we all thought was a very good solution to getting us out of this pandemic, a one-and-done shot. Has the damage been done, Dr. Lesbader?
You know, I think it is a good solution, and I think whenever you're vaccinating millions of people or doing anything to millions of people, there will be rare cases of almost anything, and I think one has to be very careful. But I agree with you. I think the people who have vaccine hesitancy, it did not help at all, and I think we even see it here at the Javits Center and elsewhere where the number of people coming in for vaccines is down. Mm-hmm. And it really would be a shame to kind of magnify something that really may not be related at all. And I think it has done some damage, certainly, probably, you know, to the vaccine arm of J&J. And I think we're jumping to conclusions. I think we do. It's reasonable to take a pause, look into it. But based on the data that I am seeing, I am not so sure it's at all related to the vaccine. And it would be a shame to throw the baby out with the bathwater, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Hey, Dr. Losbader, is there a good chance, though, that we don't get enough vaccines into the arms of people across the United States, get their double shot, so that we can get ahead of any of the concerns and stresses that might be caused by some of the variants? And essentially, can we get to herd immunity fast enough so that we'll be in good shape?
Well, that is exactly the question, and that, I think, is what Jim Jordan was getting at when he was talking or speaking with Dr. Fauci, which is, you know, when is the all-clear signal? And really, the right question should be, when do you think we'll reach herd immunity? And we think that number is somewhere, you know, around 70%. We're up to about 40% in New York of people who are vaccinated. The number of cases in the tri-state area is dropping a bit. There are other areas around the world and around the country where it's increasing. So I think we do have to push the vaccinations. There probably are some risks and there are some adverse effects. It's not 100% effective. There are a few patients who do get COVID after getting the vaccines, but overall these are highly effective, highly safe vaccines, and I think the sooner we get to herd immunity as a community effort, as a national effort, the less chance we will be to be susceptible to these variants that are popping up and are coming in from other countries.
If you had to place a bet, red or black, saying that we do get to herd immunity before we have maybe another wave because of the variants, or that we won't get to herd immunity in time. Just got about 30 seconds here. What do you think?
I think we will reach herd immunity towards the end of the summer, and I hope that avoids a bad variant. I hope.
Okay. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
We do too.
And look, I think part of the way to herd immunity is, of course, people being infected by this. And that's what we saw. So if the people who don't get vaccinated are infected and recover, then they have the antibodies that, from what we know, is similar to being vaccinated. Right, Dr. Losbader? Only have 15 seconds.
One way or another, we are going to get there. We could do it the hard way or the easy way. Yeah. The hard way is getting sick. The easy way is the vaccine. People have to choose. Hopefully, they choose the easier way.
No, I like that way, that characterization.
It's a great way.
It's easy to understand.
It's a great way to explain it.
Let's get right back to Dr. Ian Losbader, Clinical Associate Professor of Medicine at NYU Langone Medical Center, joining us on most Fridays. Dr. Losbader, I want to talk about what is happening outside of the United States, what's happening outside of Israel, and what's happening outside of the UK, because those are really the countries in the world that are far ahead of everyone else when it comes to vaccines. What happens if we get to a point where those countries reach herd immunity, but other countries don't?
That I think is exactly a critical point. In order for us to reduce global variants, we need to reduce the pool of unvaccinated and people who are getting the infection. So the sooner we all reach herd immunity, as individual countries and as a planet, the more likely it will be to prevent any of these variants. The problem, of course, is as we begin to approach herd immunity, and certainly Israel and the UK are doing very well with that, that will give us a protection for a while. But once you open up your countries and once other people come in, and we know Brazil, South America, India with this double mutant variant, unless they have vaccine provided to them or purchase vaccine or we give them vaccine, unless we're getting a global response, we cannot really eliminate the possibility of resistant variants occurring. And if that happens, then we will all need boosters that are tuned to those variants. It just makes it a longer process, a harder process, and more lives will be lost.
So when you hear a headline like we got today about Moderna saying it's going to deliver less COVID-19 vaccines than planned to the UK, Canada, and other countries this quarter because of a shortfall in doses in its European supply chain, we go back to those supply chain problems, that's not a good thing. That's troubling.
It is troubling. I think that's why we should not jump to conclusions about J&J or AstraZeneca. I think we need to do due diligence. But those are certainly helpful in the armamentarium. I think the more vaccines and the different vaccines available, the better. They don't need to be kept quite as refrigerated. So I think we need to be very cautious about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think J&J probably will, will show it to be that it's effective and not really related to this clotting disorder. Or there may be some patients who are not appropriate. If you've got platelet issues, if you've got clotting issues, speak to your doctor. If you're pregnant, if you're on birth control, you may not be an ideal candidate for that particular vaccine, but it may be perfectly fine for millions of other people. So I think we need a global effort in order, like smallpox, in order to really eradicate it. If not, we're going to need boosters probably every year like influenza.
So do you think it was a mistake for the U.S. government and the agencies associated with the vaccination campaign to come out and put a pause on J&J or suggest to put a pause?
I think public perception is key, and I think the public, already there's some vaccine hesitancy, and so I think due diligence needs to be done to reassure people. I think you basically had to put a pause. We'll have to see. There could be a subset of patients. It's small. We're talking a handful of people who had this problem, and as I say, maybe we need to identify which people may not be appropriate, but I think the vast majority of people will be appropriate, you know, and should get it. And that's really the only way we're going to prevent this pool of young people. We're seeing more young people coming down with COVID. We really need to vaccinate a lot more people, and we need to reassure people that it's safe if we don't want to prolong the agony.
Ian, just
that's
got,
really the only option.
Just got about a minute left. I want to go back to a conversation that we've had with you maybe months ago and throughout the pandemic. The pandemic revealed to us that healthier individuals wasn't always a guarantee, but typically it seemed like had a better chance of fighting COVID-19. Will we continue to look at ways to kind of improve the health of all Americans going forward? Do you feel like that was on our radar and will stay on our radar, or do you think it goes away? And just got about 45 seconds.
I think it should be on our radar. We're going to continue to talk about it after COVID on Bloomberg. But this, I think, was a wake-up call for obesity, exercise, lung disease. There are many modifiable risk factors that we should address aggressively. We have to change that COVID hunks, chunks, and drunks. We need to get out and exercise, lose weight, and I think we will improve our safety, not only from COVID, but from other diseases.
Right. Hunks, chunks, and drunks. My dad texted me, Dr. Lesbader, after last time you were on, and he said that, and he thought it was pretty good.
He hadn't heard that yet.
It's a good one. I hadn't heard it yet either.
I think we need t-shirts, mugs. I'm just going to put it out there, Ian.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Story of the magazine this week. It's also among the most read on the Bloomberg Terminal on this Friday. We're going to take you to the laid-back regulatory town that welcomed Elon Musk's Boring Company with open arms and offered up Tim plenty of dirt.
It's called Adelanto, California. Joel Weber is editor at Bloomberg Business Week. Sarah McBride is the one who wrote the story. She's a venture capital reporter at Bloomberg News. Joel Weber, I am from California. I have never heard of Adelanto, California before this story. And I got to tell you, I am so surprised to find that a city with so few residents has had so much drama.
It's kind of an incredible story. And props to Sarah for finding it and bringing it to us and just writing a great yarn. Adelanto is sort of the middle of nowhere. And the city has pretty lax rules. And when they found out that Boring Company, which is Elon Musk's tunneling venture, you know, in addition to, you know, dabbling with electric cars and space stuff, he also goes underground. They kind of realized that they needed something of a test site. So, Sarah, I'll take it. Why don't you take it from there? What was the pitch to Boring Company like?
Sure. So it was just an incredible story. This little town really has no business other than jails to speak of, and they needed new revenues, something to kind of bring more business to town. They heard that Elon Musk had been running into problems with his Boring Company in Hawthorne, California. They kept needing to get permits to dig under roads there, and they were sort of stirring up a lot of dust, and they were just running into problems getting all the permits that they needed. And they needed a town that would just be a lot more flexible. But in California, there are strict environmental rules, and that can be hard to find. So they were kind of on the lookout, talking to this county supervisor in San Bernardino County, California, who wanted the business in his county, and said, I think I can recommend some towns. So he actually did throw out a few names of cities in the high desert, and Adelanto, California was one of them. And as one person I spoke to for this story put it, if there's a gray area in environmental regulation, the city will always kind of come down on the business-friendly side. And they just did that to a large degree here, including telling the Boring Company they didn't need an environmental review, which is a months-long, sometimes years-long process that can hold up a lot of projects. And the mayor even told the Boring Company, hey, I hear that Hawthorne is worried about you're stirring up dirt. Well, we have a lot of dirt here. We have no way of telling if it's your dirt or our dirt.
Well, that was great. Sarah, it's like a couple of stories here in that, first of all, I feel like the world is courting Elon Musk right now. But, you know, Elon Musk at the same time is looking for venues and places where he can kind of do his thing, you know, unrestricted.
Right. I mean, in some ways, a lot of businesses and Elon Musk's businesses have done this as well, have looked for tax breaks. But this town was totally broke. They can't really offer any tax breaks, but they could offer something that is just as important in some ways, which is, okay, if you want to do something or dig something or whatever it is, we'll find a way to help you do it. So at the same time that Boring Company came to Adelanto, they were running into all kinds of problems with officials in Northern California over, in that case, COVID regulations. But this is a town that is sort of a live and let live town, and they just told Boring Company, come here, we'll make things easy for you, and that was worth the absence of any tax break.
Well, Sarah, you got to visit Adelanto, California this past January.
Yes,
we did. Yeah. Well, what was
kind
it?
Of?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you got to go to the town, but you didn't necessarily
get to see the boring project
up close like you thought you would.
Right. Right. So before, and the city manager kind of talked big, and I don't think he realized how unfriendly to the press Elon Musk's company tests are. So he said, don't worry, I can go in there anytime. And there is a California law that a city official can inspect businesses. He said, I can go whenever and I'll just bring you along. When I got there, I think he realized how much pushback there was from the boring company. He didn't really explain it in a satisfactory way. He just said that the boring company couldn't have visitors that week. And I was like, what do you mean? I thought you said you could visit any time. And he just kind of never really gave me the straight story. But bottom line, I believe, was that the boring company had told him no reporter visits. So I went and I looked from the outside. I talked to a foreman. I was there when the gates were open, so I kind of got a look in past the gates. But you can actually get a pretty good idea of what they're doing from outside. You can see all the cranes and the tunnel boring equipment. They have all these cement liners piled up outside. And I'd spoken to enough people that I kind of knew some of the things that they wanted to test. And that's what they're testing there.
Yeah.
For example, a way to dig.
Yeah, so let's just talk about that a little bit more, Sarah. Like, what do we know boring companies capable of, and what do we think they might be working on there?
Well, they're trying to really speed up tunneling and get it done a lot faster and cheaper than traditional tunneling companies. So they've been working on all these advances to the front piece of a tunnel boring machine, which is what actually digs through the rock or the soil or whatever the condition is. One thing that slows down tunneling is you have to dig a big vertical hole and drop a tunnel boring machine down into it. They're figuring out a way to have the tunnel boring machine go down at an angle and start boring through the soil right away, which is speeding up the process right there. And then, you know, there are other things that they'd have to work on, too, such as, you know, if they are digging in an area with water, how to pump out water and stuff like that. So I spoke to an official yesterday who thinks that their biggest advance could be in the actual tunnel boring equipment rather than the high-speed hyperloop idea that they had at first.
Just going to say that you got to love a story that, first of all, has Elon Musk in it, a little unknown town in California. It also has an animal control supervisor that you're going to want to know, unfortunately, what he got in trouble for. And then you have those felon moms.
Yeah, they were not happy with the charter school.
No.
So lots of drama.
And Joshua Trees. Joshua Trees are involved, too.
This story has everything.
It's such a great read and visual.
Thank you.
Just incredible. Sarah, thank you so much. Sarah McBride, it's among our most read. It's in the magazine this week. She is venture capital reporter at Bloomberg News on the phone in San Francisco. Find the magazine at newsstands online on the Bloomberg. Jill Weber, of course, our thanks to you, editor of Bloomberg Business Week.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Watch out, Wayfair. There's a new read, old player in town, coming for you. This is a Bloomberg exclusive, Tim. It deals with how Amazon is really planning a furniture assembly service. They're looking to go after Wayfair.
Yeah, they are. Spencer Soper has the scoop, technology and e-commerce reporter for Bloomberg News, joining us on the phone from Seattle. Spencer, congratulations on this scoop. This is like an Amazon I don't want to say Amazon employee. I got to be very careful there. This is a delivery person coming into your home and setting up that thing that you ordered online, if it's a treadmill or a bunk bed, right?
Yeah, that's precisely what it is. And it's trying to combine those two things. So some places, including Wayfair and even Amazon, has tried in the past where, you know, one person will deliver it. Maybe the boxes sit around. And then someone else comes to put it together if you opt for that service. Amazon's looking to combine those things to have like a better customer experience.
So what's the bigger strategy here, Spencer, for Amazon? Because I really do feel like they have so much data coming into their site that they get to see where the growth areas, you know, are. And the home was a big one during the pandemic. And I feel like this is just them saying, we got to be in it more aggressively.
Yeah, exactly. They want to differentiate. So people, you know, the pandemic pushed a lot of shoppers online. It also got a lot of shoppers over humps that they previously had. Like maybe they previously didn't want to buy groceries online. Suddenly they're buying groceries online. Same thing with furniture. It's like we need a desk, we need a table, we need a bed. we'll buy it online because the stores are closed or we're afraid to go to the store. So suddenly a lot of these markets that were difficult to penetrate are easily accessible. And then that's created delivery log jams. So Amazon always, you know, can see an opportunity that, all right, if other companies are having trouble getting people to stuff quickly, let's use our reputation for quick delivery and then add quick assembly service on top of that.
I'm thinking too, Spencer, this could be a pretty decent margin business too, assembly.
Well, it's a bigger ticket item on the purchase, right? Yeah. So it's like it's expensive to Amazon to deliver a roll of paper towels, you know. But if they're bringing you a $700-$800 sofa, there's a little more margin to play with, and they can, you know, pay somebody a few bucks to set the thing up for you, to put some legs on a table or assemble a chair, that sort of thing.
Hey, Spencer, how do the drivers feel about this?
So drivers are worried and apprehensive. There's still lingering concerns about COVID because people will tend to hover over you while you're in their home. But that's fading as more and more people are vaccinated. But they're also just worried about exactly how it's going to work. They've been given very scant details on how they're going to be trained, you know, what the performance metrics are going to be like, because Amazon is always rating people on how quickly they do things. And you just introduce a lot of variables when you go into someone's home. You know, is this going to be a quick move of a mattress down a hallway into a bedroom? Or are you going to be, like, climbing over piles of stuff in some hoarder house, you know, and it's a half-day endeavor? So those are the questions that they have.
You just created this image for me. It's like, you know, I could just see a delivery person's nightmare. I feel like this is such a bigger story, though, constantly of Amazon, and Spencer, you know this better than all of us, just kind of increasingly being a part of all of our lives on so many different levels.
Yeah, and they just still want to get deeper into the house and deeper into the home and eliminate these pain points. And then beyond, it's going to start initially with furniture, but it could, it could expand to appliances, things like washing machines, dishwashers, and things that would require more driver training. But if Amazon sees that there's appetite for it, they'd certainly put that money in it and that training into it. And then that means trouble for other people who do that now, like Home Depot and Lowe's and that sort of thing.
So Amazon still already has this kind of Amazon Home Services, right? Where, like, if I order a big screen TV, I don't know, a flat screen TV, like as if they make other TVs these days, right? I'm really dating myself here. If I order a TV on Amazon, I can buy a bracket and also, like, add on the idea that somebody comes to my home and does this. Does this build on that?
Yeah, this builds on that, and it simplifies it. So one, Amazon Home Services is available in select markets now, right? It's not universal. We don't have it where I live, a little bit south of Seattle. But the complication there is one person's delivering the TV, then you got it sitting in a box, and you're waiting for some other contractor to show up. And so just think about, you just ordered a new bunk bed, you know, and your kids are excited to try it out, but it's going to be sitting in the box while you wait for some other delivery guy to come. And that also just adds expense. So this is just simplified. Look, we're already sending the delivery people, bring it in, set it up for them, pick up all the cardboard and packaging, get it out of there. And if they don't like it, take it back immediately. Don't leave it hanging around. So it's keeping the cost down for Amazon as well.
I'm so glad we have you here, because there's a couple of other stores on Amazon, but I want to make sure we at least get to this one about Jeff Bezos, kind of thinking about his legacy and in his, I think, a letter out to his annual letter out to, I think, shareholders. He talked about specifically, Spencer, you know, Amazon must treat workers better. Tell us about that. What's going on here?
Yeah, kind of day late and a dollar short on that.
It's like good note to self, right?
Yeah, I don't know. How do you interpret that, right? It's like, he's leaving the day-to-day operations, right? So employee treatment is really going to fall on Andy Jassy, the incoming new CEO. And so Bezos is like, hey, Andy, take better care of everybody. See you later. And so, I guess the proof is in the pudding, right? It's like there's a lot of ambitious things here. We're going to reinvent this, and we're going to be the best, most safest company. How about you just do a little better, you know? And so we'll just have to see how they do on this this bold proclamation.
Hey, Spencer, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I mean, what does that look like? Because Amazon loves to talk about its $15 minimum wage and employees getting health care, all in the wake of the union's defeat in Bessemer.
Yeah, I mean, it just Amazon is going to have to calibrate its customer obsession with an employee focus. You can easily misuse people when you whitewash it with customer obsession. And so what's good for your customer isn't always good for your employee and vice versa. So they just have to be a little more deliberate in differentiating, you know, and walking that tight line.
Be
that,
better.
Tightrope.
It's about being better. Listen, you know, Business Roundtable, they all came out and said multiple stakeholders. Well, you got to kind of walk the talk here at this point. It's yes, customers, it's investors, but it's also you got to take care of, you know, your house, your employees. Great reporting as always. So glad we got to check in with you. Spencer Soper, tech and e-commerce reporter here at Bloomberg News on the phone from Seattle.
Yeah. Amazon hiring 500,000 people in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, and they can really move the needle when it comes to employee programs and really set the tone for other corporations.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, indeed, folks. Just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session. We are on track for another week of gains. I think the fourth in a row for both the S&P and the Dow. NASDAQ on track for a third week of gains. Let's get to it with Hillary Kramer. She is President and Chief Investment Officer at A&G Capital Research. She's also author of Game Changer Investing, How to Profit from Tomorrow's Billion-Dollar Trends. She's on the phone in New York City. Hillary, nice to have you back with us. Let's talk about those billion-dollar trends. Anything new as a result of 13 months into the pandemic that you think investors need to be keeping an eye on?
A market that's way too high, Carol. That's really our feeling. We think that this melt up, especially the one in April with the S&P 500 being up close to 5% already and we're only mid-month, it's really a tough market to find good opportunities out there. And I liken it to, like, I'm a football fanatic, New York Giants. It's like when you have a quarterback and, like, all his receivers are covered, right? He has no one to throw to. He sees the defensive lineman coming towards him. and like he's like going to be a goner. That's how it feels to all of us in my firm. Hmm. Yeah, it really does. It really does. Now, yes,
nothing the bank said this week kind of gave you, you know, reason to be calm?
Not really, because I think what was really important this week was what Larry Fink said from BlackRock, and it's still, it's like indelible in my mind, and that is that the stimulus that we've seen, $7 trillion, has not been to stimulate the economy. It's been to bridge us during a terrible pandemic. And that is really the key to it all. Now we have President Biden looking at infrastructure, and that's one that's very hard to execute, and it's very hard to have that trickle down to Main Street, to the everyday person. And so I think it's going to be a tough time. Now, with that being said, you know me. Yeah, there's always stocks to buy. But, like, everyone hated Goldman Sachs, Carol, at $220. Remember that they hated it pre-pandemic? Now, at $342, now we think it could go to $375, and we know because that would be 1.5 times book value. But that's only $30 more that Goldman Sachs has to go up. That's about 10%, not even. So there are companies we like, and we do think energy is going to take off again. You know, we think that there's some opportunity near term there, like, you know, Exxon with a 6.2% dividend yield. But and actually, if you do want one that we still think is undervalued that the market missed, and that's Kronos, K-R-O, that makes that titanium dioxide pigments, which is for plastics and paints. Mm-hmm. Just one that the market will figure out the inefficiency, and at $16.90, it'll probably be back being a $30 stock soon enough. But a lot of the other smaller cap stocks or mid caps, they're already fully valued, if not, you know, overly valued.
Hillary, I'm eager to talk to you about fixed income, because we got some notes from our producer about how you're feeling about the real yield that consumers are getting when it comes to
when
fixed
Tim
income.
When Tim is excited
right now
about fixed income, I know. I'm just going to tell you, Hillary, you should feel very honored, because this isn't a world he loves.
So anything that pays less than 2%, you say, looks like dead money. So what is the point of fixed income in a portfolio right now?
Well, it's about diversification, and so that's an excellent question to ask, but it's still diversification. It's just as simple as that. One thing that really we wonder is why, you know, who has brought this 10-year down to 1.57% from 1.75%? So if you want to talk in terms of fixed income and the notes, I think the most important point is, you know, someone is out there buying up U.S. Treasuries. And is it because of an uptick in cases? Is there something the Fed's doing that they actually haven't told us about? But what I will say, to take fixed income back to equities, is that at 1.57%, technology is going to, like, it has been, like, big cap technology has been taking off again, right? That's why we have the Oracles and the Microsoft at 52-week highs. But as we see that 10-year start to rise, right, and that goes back to 1.75%, everyone who's been jumping back into equities are going to be in for a really big surprise.
Well,
you know? And so that's I think my biggest concern. But yes, under 2%, it's really, there's just so little money to be made out there, and we still have the fixed income investor being forced into the equity markets, and that's why they're jumping in, or that's why even I
can I tell you, Hillary, this sounds like if I could go back a few years after the financial crisis, we could have had this conversation where people, you know, it was constantly a search for yield, and it's why investors were, you know, consistently tapping into the equity markets or other asset classes, because they were searching yield. Why could we not get a repeat of what happened after the financial crisis in terms of markets? Why could we not, in your view, get a repeat, or could we get a repeat after this crisis?
We actually already have.
You're saying it's done already?
Accelerated. We already have taken off. You know, the compression in time has already happened, because everything happens that much faster. And And Carol, in terms of the financial crisis, that was a meltdown of the whole system. So you had forced liquidations that had to do with something very systemic, right? With the cost of LIBOR, what banks refused to borrow and give to each other, and everything just like seized up. But in this particular case, we're talking about a pandemic, and we're talking about a lot of money that's been sloshing around out there that has been used for speculation. And even though I do, as you know, recommend Coinbase, and I think Coinbase, and it traded back down, I think it's going to go up. And I even think Bitcoin, which came down $2,000 or $3,000 today, you know, could be $100,000 for a Bitcoin. But that doesn't mean I believe over the long term. It could certainly go back down to $5,000. But for those who are short term investors, you know, don't. You get on the train, because that whole digital currency, cryptocurrency, it really is taking off.
So
there's no when to get off.
We're almost out of time.
Everyone else dumped.
So just yes or no, are you adding it to portfolios? Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Not yet.
Hillary Kramer, President and Chief Investment Officer over at A&G Capital Research.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.